Hey, Bill Nye, the Science Guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Say I'm a sound scientist, came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hello, this is Todd Stiefel.
And I'm Jess Constantine. You're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association.
And humanism is, according to Greg Epstein in his book, Good Without God, humanism rejects dependence on faith, the supernatural, divine texts, resurrection, reincarnation, or anything else for which we have no evidence. To put it another way, humanists believe in life before death.
I like that one, Todd.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I was actually just started reading his book. It's pretty interesting so far.
It is interesting. And did you see him recently?
I did, actually. I saw him this past weekend. I went up to Boston. They were giving the Harvard Humanist Chaplaincy's Humanist of the Year Award to Seth MacFarlane, the creator of Family Guy, American Dad, The Cleveland Show. And
that's awesome.
It was a pretty cool weekend. Yeah, they did a community service project during the day, and I went out with them, and we helped make a community art center more energy efficient. It had been built like 150 years ago and was super leaky, so we were fixing that up. And then that night, Seth came out and gave a talk, an excellent talk, actually. He talked for like 15 minutes about why he's a humanist and why humanism is great, about science and things along those lines, while interspersing it with extraordinarily profane humor, but it was still absolutely hilarious.
Cool.
And then he did Q&A for a long time. It was a really fun weekend. They've got a great program going on up there at the Humanist Chaplaincy of Harvard.
Well, Todd, while you were having fun gallivanting in the world of humanism, I was hard at work here in the H&N studio putting up a long list of our podcast episode archives. And
awesome.
Actually, Greg Epstein appears two times in the history of the Humanist Network News podcast, which is now the Humanist Hour, of course. So in episode 17, we interviewed Greg when he took on that leadership position as the humanist chaplain at Harvard. And in HNN 45, we interviewed Greg about his book, Good Without God, which you read the definition of humanism from. So so listeners, definitely check out our archives, newly uploaded. Same thing. All of our show notes episodes are there with information and links, and there's music. There's lots of cool names. So, and Todd, this was, let's see, we started in 2005, 6 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And so actually some episodes don't even have me.
Really?
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Yep. The show predates me. I think, though, that I'm only going to have the episodes that do feature me. We start at my favorite episode, actually, which is Humanist Network News number 12. So this was my very first episode, and I felt like a rock star. Do you want to hear the story, Todd?
Yeah, absolutely.
So this was actually October of 2006, so 5 years ago. My co-host at the time, who was Duncan Crary, we were working for the Institute for Humanist Studies. We got to interview two celebrities, Holly Neer, who is a sort of a longtime activist in humanist rights, and she's also a sort of a folk or a singer, a musician, and also the comedian Julia Sweeney.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, who was, for those of you who don't recognize her name, she was Pat from Saturday Night Live. And we got to interview her in New York City in the penthouse that she was staying at while she debuted her sort of one-man, one-woman monologue show called Letting Go of God.
Was it one man or was it one woman?
Nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to interview her in New York City, in Manhattan, in her penthouse apartment. I was so nervous. I was so excited. We got to meet her daughter, and like, she's just hilarious, and she was nice, and the interview went really well. And then we got to see her show, which we got in for free. She just gave us tickets. I felt like so professional and so important to be able to experience all that stuff. And her model, and her letting go of God was just, it's hilarious. I highly recommend listening to that. I don't think she does it anymore on Broadway, but you can still buy the CD. It's really, really funny. Maybe I'll play a clip of it sometime.
You might have to get her back on the show sometime.
Yeah, that would be great. I from what I hear, she still floats around at all the various conferences and stuff like that. I haven't seen her at a conference yet, but
when you say floats around, is that like levitating?
Yeah, yep. That's another thing that many people don't know about her. So anyway, HNN 12, that's the first episode that you can see from our archives, and it was my first episode on the show, so it was my most memorable one. And
yeah, now you were telling me in the archives there's also an episode with all four of the Four Horsemen, is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. It's HNN number 24. So that would have been October of 2007. So Duncan traveled to the Atheist Alliance International annual conference, and he got to interview Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, and Christopher Hitchens. It's a pretty amazing show. So, and this was when, you know, New Atheism was sort of new and hot, and when it just sort of, they were just dubbed, I think, the New Atheists.
Wow, what a fantastic opportunity to get to interview all four of those at the same time. That must have been an intellectual challenge, though. That's some serious brain power you're interviewing there.
Well, and I remember that Duncan always had this goal of asking questions that they had never been asked before. So he really set the bar high for interviewing. And it's another one of my favorite shows for sure.
Indeed. So, Jess, you said we got an interesting listener comment.
We did. It actually came through, it was sent through our contact form on our website. And this is a message from Phil Appleton, and it reads, "The Personhood Amendment has been a huge subject of debate where I live. I was hoping you could cover it in a podcast to help give me a few guidelines to stay unbiased and open-minded while talking to my friends who are for it. In case you haven't heard, the amendment is about abortion, which I think is situational and a personal matter between soon-to-be parents. But the problem for me is that it opens a path to make contraceptives illegal. It seems that population control, or lack thereof, will be a direct consequence of the amendment. As a humanist, I want a better human life for a future, but I don't think that this personhood amendment will do that. Thank you, Phil Appleton."
Yeah, so apparently this amendment would actually cause personhood to start at conception. So like a fertilized embryo, not right. Even like a fetus, would have full legal rights of an adult human.
Right.
Which is just kind of crazy. The repercussions of that could be nuts.
Yeah. So there's an activist, Keith Mason, who he's the president of Personhood USA, which is a group that's actually trying to rewrite laws of every state and even some countries. And as you said, they want to recognize someone as a person exactly at the point of creation. So exactly at fertilization, when the sperm meets the egg. And I mean, to me, I was just reading on NPR. They did an interview with both Keith and also the sort of lead attorney with the ACLU, who obviously is trying to protect women's reproductive rights. And some problems that they talked about with passing a law that declares personhood at the moment of fertilization is that, first of all, not every fertilized egg turns into an actual long-term pregnancy.
Most don't.
Yeah. According to the NPR article, it's around 50% because a fertilized egg then has to be implanted into the woman's uterus. So they're talking about sperm in an egg that's not even inside of the uterus yet. They want to give that full rights as a person.
Well, what about atopic pregnancies, which are never going to be viable and will only serve to kill the mother?
Exactly. Yep. So they would say that... if a woman were to abort a pregnancy, and what Todd is saying is that's an egg that's been fertilized outside of the uterus, and it stays outside of the uterus. So obviously that would kill the mother because the fetus would continue to grow outside of the uterus. So the woman would not have legal rights to abort that pregnancy, which is basically signing a death sentence for herself.
Right. Essentially, this amendment would murder any woman who has a pregnancy where the fetus takes up in the fallopian tubes.
Right.
Hooray for your morals.
And so some other issues that the ACLU brought up are that not only does this affect, you know, the actual declaration of when a fetus becomes a person. But if this were passed, then there would be a whole bunch of other sort of ripple effects of varying degrees. Some of them is the idea of, so what happens to like the morning after pill, because that becomes a form of murder. Some contraceptives. So it's like, where do you draw the line, you know?
Apparently they want to draw it right at conception, which,
right.
You know, they're obviously just, they found a new cute way of trying to repress people's rights. I mean, me personally, at least, I'm both pro-life and pro-choice. Like, I would prefer not to have an abortion with, you know, or have the woman I'm with have an abortion. But, you know, I would like to have the ability to change my mind. I'd like to have the ability, and for the woman to have the ability, to make that choice for herself. We shouldn't be, you know, these rules and laws are purely religious based, and this country as a secular nation should not have any laws that are strictly purely religious based that don't correspond to other non-religious values. So it frustrates me on a variety of fronts. And it was already flipping decided in the 70s in Roe v. Wade. I don't know why we're still having this argument.
Right. I don't understand what loophole they found to make this, like how it even got passed to be on the state ballot. I mean, this is going to be on a state ballot in November in Mississippi, voting whether or not to change the definition of personhood or to, I don't understand how it's even possible.
Well, and I'm sure they're emboldened by the fact that the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, is currently majority Catholic, even though Catholic is a relatively small chunk of the general population. You know, the religious right, and particularly the Catholics, the Catholic wing of that, has pushed really hard to get Catholics onto the Supreme Court, specifically so that if abortion gets to the Supreme Court again, they can overturn Roe v. Wade.
Right.
And it's worked.
Right.
And so if they get this law and it's challenged and it goes all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, Catholics tend to be very opposed to abortion in general. Obviously, there's exceptions. So we very well could see the end of Roe v. Wade if this got passed and then challenged, which hopefully that doesn't happen. But it's a scary concept. These fundies are clever.
Right. It's hard to imagine that their long-term goal isn't to overturn Roe versus Wade. I mean, that's definitely their game plan.
That's definitely the game plan. Absolutely.
I like that some activists who are trying to sort of get attention about this and to inform women, you know, all sorts of women, all sorts of male supporters, just about, you know, what are the things that are really at stake here? This is not just about abortion. It's about female health rights. It's about reproductive freedom. It's about all these other sort of mundane laws. I mean, you mentioned, what did you say? If this personhood thing is passed, so if every pregnant woman at the moment of fertilization or the moment of conception is now considered two human beings, like, what does that mean for other laws? What were some of the ones that you and I were talking about earlier?
My favorite was the one you mentioned about driving in the HOV lane.
Yeah. Are they allowed to?
Yeah. Hey, God, there's two of us in here.
Can a fetus inherit property? Can, like, when you're drawing district lines for zoning purposes, like, do you then have to count pregnant women as two people? You mentioned taxes. Does a woman claim, how does that affect her tax claiming?
Right. Do you get extra support from the government? Do you get extra health care? I mean, what happens?
Right.
Right down the line, you get all sorts of bizarre confusion when you're talking about something that could not possibly survive on its own be counted as a person.
Right. So another ripple effect that Phil mentioned in his message is that not only it does making contraceptives illegal open a whole nother door of sort of a legal battlefield, but also how does this affect our population control? If every fertilized egg becomes a human being, that's a lot of human beings that our planet, we're learning, might not be able to sustain.
It could be a significant problem.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought about a whole nother can of worms this opens up for me personally. So we have, my wife Diana and I have what we refer to as kidsicles. So right before we were going to get married, we found out she had cancer, like a very serious cancer, which she's really fortunate to have survived. And it was in her lower abdomen region. And so they told us the radiation they were going to do for this would likely destroy all her eggs. And so if we plan on having kids after marriage, we better hop to it So we went in this mad scramble, and she got on the hormone treatment, and I got tested, and, you know, I went in, had to do my deed at the clinic and make my deposit and all this stuff. And fortunately, even though we had 3 weeks, we were successful. And, you know, out of 16 eggs, 15 of them were fertilized. And so we now have 15 fertilized embryos in deep freeze storage. So we have kidsicles.
Yep.
Now, if that kind of personhood law were passed across the country, they would not just be kidsicles. They would be 15 persons with theoretically legal rights as anyone else. So does me keeping them in a deep freezer count as child abuse?
Right. That's a good question.
You know, what if we want to donate them to charity? Like, what if we want to donate them to stem cell research? What if we want them to go to, you know, people who, you know, can't have children? Is that like constitute human trafficking? What happens there? I guess that would totally rule out selling them on eBay.
So, Phil, I have two resources for you. One is a pretty neat column that I read by Massimo Pigliucci. It's called Rationally Speaking. And I'll put a link to it up on the show notes page for this episode. But I think Massimo does a pretty neat job of sort of talking objectively about this concept of personhood. And he says you have to sort of look at it both scientifically but also philosophically. And he offers suggestions of sort of having a discussion about it without actually coming to a resolution, because he says that's nearly impossible, especially if you're talking to someone who has different beliefs. But he said his goal is more often to just open a dialogue so that people at least start to think more about why they believe what they believe. So I thought that was pretty neat. And the other thing is that we have a humanist advice columnist called Ask Richard. And I'll post the details on the show notes page for this episode as well. So you can feel free to sort of send him any sort of specific situation that you might find yourself in and how to handle that interaction with your friends if you'd like. So
yeah, Richard Wade gives great advice too.
Yeah. So Todd, there's one other thing that that we should talk about, which is a church that was caught doing something rather naughty. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, this is completely nuts. So this is a BBC TV show they're releasing, and by the time this airs, it will have already been out, and the BBC has done an article on it. Well, they believe up to 300,000 babies, 300,000 babies were stolen by the Catholic Church and sold to other parents. So what they did is, in Catholic hospitals in Spain, people would have children and they would take the baby away to like take care of it. And then they come back later and say, oh, I'm really sorry, your baby died.
Really?
And the baby didn't die. They sold the baby to someone else.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is like, how atrocious is that? First, you heartbreak this poor mother. Second, you steal her child. Third, you profit off of human trafficking. So absolutely insane across the board. 300,000 babies. This was like a 60-year scandal. And when it started, apparently it was under Franco's rule. And one of the things they did is they were particularly targeting parents who were like potential political enemies, so they couldn't reproduce. And they would steal their babies from them so they wouldn't have a legacy and sell them to other people. Or to people they thought were better, or to political allies and stuff. So, I mean, how evil is this?
Yeah, I can't even, I'm hearing the words that you're saying, and I'm just like, I can't even imagine. That's insane. That's crazy.
One of the most evil things I've ever heard, and right up there with the pedophilia scandal and cover-up. I mean, is there an organization on planet Earth more evil in the history of the world over the long term than the Catholic Church? I mean, you could probably put Nazi Germany up there for like a short-term burst of a decade or so of pure evil, but I mean, stealing babies and telling their mother the child is dead, just sick.
Right. So this was a hospital that was run by a church?
It was a bunch of hospitals run by the Catholic Church, And apparently the Catholic Church was administering all adoptions. So they probably were taking kids from other hospitals as well. And apparently it stopped when the nation actually took back over adoption services. But the whole thing started unraveling when a father on his deathbed told his son, you know, I've been holding this secret for your whole life. You know, I got to tell you, you're not my real son. I bought you from a priest.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, how shocking would that be? He said, I traveled to this city in Spain, and there I met this priest. There was two other people who went with me, this other couple who also bought a son. And, you know, you need to know that this happened. And so he got a DNA test, and sure enough, he was not related to his parents. And they hunted down the other person through the two parents who bought that kid. And yeah, they found out about it too, and they started digging, and it turns out it's this like massive, like huge scandal.
Wow. So I guess the authorities right now are reviewing something like 900 cases.
So far, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, some parents are obviously afraid that they'll be like become criminalized or tried as criminals for doing what they do.
Considering they are criminals.
Yeah.
I mean, but...
Well, but the parents... I guess buying babies either way is probably not the most legal thing, but because it wasn't adoption, right? It was a just like a black market of babies.
Well, it's from what I've read, it seems like it was kind of both. Like some of it was just buying off of a priest in the street.
Right.
Which is nuts. But apparently a lot of the parents, some of the parents obviously knew they were doing something sketchy.
Right.
But apparently, a lot of them had no idea. They thought these were official adoptions. And a lot of times the Catholic Church would tell these parents that, you know, oh, this is a baby. Her parents didn't want her, you know, so you can give her a loving home that she couldn't have gotten elsewhere, which is completely untrue. You know,
right.
It's like some poor heartbroken mother out there crying. And apparently there's been like hundreds and hundreds of women who've been told their baby died and didn't believe it because they'd asked to see the corpse. And the church would refuse to show it.
Right.
Or they would come bring a corpse out that looked frozen, and they'd be all suspicious, like, wait a minute, what? That doesn't look like my baby. It's frozen. And the church would be like, oh, yeah, that's your baby. And so there was all these women screaming out, like, my baby is not dead. Something happened to my baby. Somebody took my baby. And the church labeled them hysterical and had this, like, campaign to make them look like they were crazy. So, like, not only are they stealing, heartbreaking, and selling – but they're also like psychologically scarring and traumatizing these women by labeling them as hysterical.
I that's awful on every level. It's just yet another good reason for the separation of church and state, right?
And the question is, will there ever be justice, or are they just going to get away with it again? You know, when are we going to start confiscating church property, selling it, and get paying back these people for the damage that's caused? These children have been raped and these other children have been stolen. It's nuts.
Right. I feel like our country has a long history of these just incredible injustices that we just have never taken responsibility for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, slavery. I mean, we've never done a single thing to make up to the people that we've enslaved.
And I don't know if we could anymore on the slavery issue, but in this issue, these people are all still alive, you know?
Right.
Or a lot of them. I mean, some of them are dead. It's been going on since like the 30s, but a lot of these kids are still alive and the parents as well. So,
right. I mean, I can think of ways. Obviously you can't directly make up for slavery to the people who were directly affected, but there are definitely, I'm sure, relatives of the living relatives of people who were enslaved. And but I mean, there are sure. So many policies. I mean, like racial profiling and people who are tried by, you know, their peers who aren't really the peers. I don't know. I just feel like slavery looks different today, but it still exists. That's just, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it saddens me.
Indeed.
Things like this make me sad.
You know what?
What's that?
I think we should shift notes, because this Catholic Church scandal is depressing and frustrating. I don't want to dwell on that. I think we should do something really fun and interview Dave Silverman. I think we should have a rally.
What kind of rally?
A celebration of secular values.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
we have as our guest, David Silverman. He is the organizer and lead on the Reason Rally, which will be March 24th, 2012 on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. How sweet is that?
That's awesome. So in addition to Dave's role with the Reason Rally, he's also the current president of the American Atheists, which is a nonprofit that supports the rights of nonbelievers. He also co-hosts the Atheist Viewpoint Television, and he writes for the No God blog, and he attends protest debates and conferences for atheism and free thought across the country.
And here's our Skype interview with Dave. David Silverman, welcome to the Humanist Hour. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Todd and Jess. Thanks for having me on the show.
You are a very busy man lately. There's a lot to talk about. The first thing I have in mind to talk about is the Reason Rally. So can you tell us your role and also tell us what this is all about?
Well, the Reason Rally is a great thing to start off with because it is, of all the balls that I'm juggling right now, it is the most important thing that's going on. It is the largest secular atheist gathering in world history, and it's going to be on the National Mall, Washington, D.C. on March 24th, which is a Saturday, in 2012. And it is going to be really the it's going to be the greatest atheist event whatever was. This is what it's going to be. We're going to have all the leaders of all the major national organizations plus Dawkins, plus L. Hitchens has been invited. I don't know if he'll make it. Plus Dawkins, plus Myers, yourself, Hemant Mehta, Jamila Bey. We're going to Greta Christina is going to be there. Plus, we're going to have Bad Religion giving a free concert. Jamie Kilstein will be there to give some comedy, and we are still. Yeah, he is great. And there are more announcements coming. There are more people coming. There are more. We're just hopefully getting into some final stages now to announce a few more names for this event. Keep your eye on the website. The website is reasonrally.org, reasonrally.org.
David, can you just give our listeners some background about what you're trying to accomplish with the Reason Rally?
The big picture of the Reason Rally is that we have about 40 to 50 million atheists in this country. And when I say atheist, I'm talking my definition of atheist. Whether or not they call themselves an atheist or not, that's not my point. When I say there's 40 to 50 million non-religious, secular people in this country, and about 0.1% of those people are actually involved with the movement. And now that's 40 to 50,000 people. So what if we were to give that 40 to 50,000 person group a 15, 20, 30%, 40% bump in a day? What if we were to bring in 5, 10, maybe 15,000 people into the movement or into this main area and introduce them to the movement? Introduce them to all the different segments of the movement, all the different options of being involved in the movement. Let them pick. What happens if we take that 40 to 50,000 and make it 60 to 70,000 overnight? That's what we're trying to do. We would energize this movement with not only more money, but more energy, more energetic volunteers, more cheerleaders from the side, more people who are willing to write letters, more people who are willing to shake some hands, more people who are willing to put their atheism on their sleeves and be outed atheists. What would happen if we took a whole bunch of closeted atheists and made them outed atheists? That's the point of the Reason Rally, to bring in people who are already atheists. We're not trying to convert anybody. We're going to bring in people who are already atheists and turn them into outed atheists, hopefully by introducing them to the entire movement at large. One of the things that we should know about this movement is that it's very diverse. And as difficult as it is to understand, there are some atheists who aren't exactly like me. I know that's hard to believe, but there are some atheists
Thank
who actually
goodness that's true.
And there are some atheists who disagree with me vehemently, but those atheists also, there's whole groups of atheists, you know, where you got, it's not just about American Atheists. This is about the Council for Secular Humanism. This is about the Randi Foundation, about Richard Dawkins. This is about the Secular Coalition for America, American Humanist Association. This is about all of the major players in this movement and bringing people in and saying, okay, here's what they are. Here's their different market segments. Pick one or two or three and get involved. And, you know, even if they don't get involved, they're still going to have an incredibly good time. They're still going to laugh. They're still going to sing. They're going to dance. And they're going to be in a place with thousands and thousands and thousands of other atheists, which is probably going to be a very monumental effect in a very monumental event in their lives. I remember very clearly the first time that I walked into a room full of atheists. I remember it very clearly, and there were only 200-300 people in the room, but I remember it very clearly. Now, just imagine that multiplied times 10 or 20. Just imagine the power that people are going to feel when they walk in, when closeted atheists walk onto a field, walk onto the National Mall, and meet thousands and thousands of people just like them. That in and of itself is going to make the event worth it.
Now, Dave, you are also the president of the American Atheists. And so I've noticed you've used the word atheist a bunch of times. Is this an event more for atheists, or is this also an event for humanists, free thinkers, agnostics, and others as well?
And this is a very good point because, like I said, Todd, this is my definition of atheist. And my definition of atheist is all of the above, the humanists, the free thinkers, the secular nuns. When I say atheist, that's what I'm talking about. This event will be about secularism. This will be about all of us. This is not just about hardcore atheism. Hardcore atheism is a very small portion of the movement. Okay, if you look at the other side, James Randi's going to be there. They're not even an atheist organization. Of course they are, in my definition, but in their definition, they're not. Another great example is my good friend Bonnie Cousins, who is the executive director of the Society for Humanistic Judaism. She doesn't call herself an atheist at all. She calls herself a Jew. I call her an atheist, and she calls me a Jew, so we have this little thing going on. But it's an excellent question, and the answer is this event is for all of the above. This event is not a religion-bashing event. This event is a pro-atheist event, not an anti-religion event. This is yay us, not boo them. We are the fastest-growing segment in all 50 states, yay us. This is good music, fun. I'm sure there will be some people poking some fun at religion, I'm not going to lie, but the big point of it all is that this movement is broad. This event is as broad as we can be. So atheists, agnostics, brights, secular humanists, secular nuns, skeptics, of course, anybody who's a secular person, anybody who doesn't believe in a God, it doesn't have an active belief in a God, anybody who fits that description is included happily at this rally. And will be represented in force at this rally.
Is there a particular theme for this event?
The theme for the event is a celebration of secular values. And so when you talk about the secular values, well, what are the secular values? Well, secular values are, of course, freedom, freedom to think, freedom to speak, freedom to research, freedom to be an outed atheist in this country. One of the things that we're asking for and now going to start demanding is equality in the hearts and minds of America's citizenry. And yeah, we have legal equality now, but that equality is constantly threatened. And of course, we are still, except for the teabaggers, the most hated group in the country. People still don't like us. And we're going to be there saying, all right, you know what? You've got to start paying attention to who we are. We are everywhere. We're not some tiny minority that you can brush away. We're growing fast. And by the way, we're right. And by the way, we're very proud of being right. And by the way, we have darn good politicians that should be running in general elections and being elected, not being turned away because they're non-religious. We have to talk to the religious politicians and say, hey, you know what? We're worth courting. You have to talk to us. You have to pay attention to us, and you have to listen to us because we are a voting bloc, and we are uniting with each other, and we will be voting you down if you don't pay attention to us. And that's a good thing. This is all a good thing. It is about time for the atheists, and again, small A atheists, to take a stand and take our rightful place in this country. At the same time, this is not a protest. This is not a negative event. This is a rally. This is a celebration of the fact that we are growing so quickly, the fact that we are the fastest growing in all 50 states, and the fact that all of the trends, from the global trends to the local trends, all show us growing in power, growing in every measurement, really, and as well as popularity over the next several years. And we're really happy about it, and we're psyched to take this whole movement to the next level.
Now, David, is there anything that our listeners can do to help support the Reason Rally?
Well, there's one easy way that every single one of your listeners can help, and that is to come to the rally. It doesn't count to support us in spirit, because we all know spirits don't exist. Get to the rally. We need physical presence. There will not be a live feed. There will not be anything that you can do remotely. We don't want that to happen. This is a physical march. We have to come to Washington, D.C. We have to be counted. And that's what I'm asking everybody to do. If you go to the website, we have discounts on airfare, we have discounts on buses, and we have discounted hotels. So just come and get there any way you can, and have a great time, because it's going to be a wonderful time that you don't want to miss.
David, you mentioned that one of the goals for this event is sort of that legislative and legal equality for free thinkers and atheists. And I know that's something that you do a lot of advocating for. And recently you've been in the news about the 9/11 memorial. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening with that case, and maybe just give a little background for our listeners who aren't yet familiar with it?
Okay, so the 9/11 memorial. So 9/11 happens, and of course the World Trade Center buildings are built out of T-joints. That's the shape of the buildings, was a whole bunch of T-joints. And when the buildings fell, hundreds of T-joints survived the fall. And what they did is they found one, and they took it up, and they straightened it, and they repaired it, and they mounted it, and they carved Jesus in it and a whole bunch of other prayers, and they welded other things to it. Back in 2002, they had said, hey, we're going to take this cross that we've just modified and repaired and made look like a cross, and we're going to put it in the memorial for the World Trade Center. And back then, American atheists said, okay, if you're going to do that, that's representing one group over another. You can't do that. You can't just allow one or the other. You have to allow equal representation. 400 to 500 atheists died on 9/11. And we will offer to pay for a memorial for atheists in 9/11. Totally ignored. Nobody called us back. But then the issue went away because they took this cross and they stuck it on private church property and they left it there. Earlier this summer, without warning, they came back and said, oh, this week we're putting it in the World Trade Center in its permanent home. And we immediately replied with, no, you can't do that unless you allow everybody else to have equal representation. 400 to 500 people, 400 to 500 atheists died on 9/11. We're going to be there too. We will give you a choice, and this is under my presidency. We will give you a choice of design, and we will pay for the monument, but we're not going to allow the law to be broken for this memorial. Again, no response. They took the memorial, they took the cross, and they installed the cross on public land in the memorial. It's public land, public money, $120 billion. Some of it was raised by a congressional act.
Wow.
To put this memorial in, and they installed it by a priest in a religious ceremony. So what we have in the World Trade Center right now is a working shrine. He actually consecrated the ground. So what we have is a working shrine to Christianity in the World Trade Center Memorial, and nothing representing the atheists. The only other religion that's represented is the Jews. And let me tell you a little bit about this, because it really was the silliest thing that they did. They allowed some Jewish rabbi, I believe it was, or some Jewish artist, to go into the rubble after the rubble, okay? And they took some rubble and they made a great big Jewish star, and they installed that in the World Trade Center too. Now, they did that, and they announced that after our protest began, after we began to say, hey, you can't do that. You have to allow everybody in. So on one hand, they're saying the cross is a part of the building. The cross is a secular memorial. They love to use that. The cross represents all religions, which is an abomination in and of itself. And they call it an artifact and say it's not religious. And then
they consecrate it.
That they consecrated, right. They consecrated. They put it in with a religious thing, with a religious ceremony, and then they brought in the Jews. Now, why are they going to bring in the Jews in a non-artifact way? Why are they going to allow the Jewish people to come in with their symbol made after the tragedy from the rubble and not let anybody else? Well, they're doing it because they know we're right. They're doing it because they know that their symbol is religious, their symbol is Christian, and they wanted the Jews to be on their side, not ours. And lo and behold, what happened? The ADL came out in support of them and against our lawsuit, which is very disappointing and at the same time very predictable. So what do we have? We've got a situation at the World Trade Center where two religions are being represented, and no, and not us. And just to put things in perspective, according to the USA Today, the state of New York is 13% non-religious and 5% Jewish. So we've got a smaller minority by less than half. And half of those Jews, by the way, are atheists, according to other statistical data. So we've got a minority by less than half and a majority of over us that have religious that have a religious monument in this secular memorial and not us. And that's not going to stand. We're certainly not going to let 9/11, which was a faith-based attack, be considered an attack on Christianity or an attack on Christianity and Judaism. This is an American tragedy. This is an American law that has been broken. It's an Americans that were attacked. And we will demand and we will get equal representation. Now, equal representation can be achieved two ways. Equal representation can be achieved, well, frankly, the right way and the wrong way, but either way is fine. The right way is for them to take the religious stuff out of the memorial, put it back on public land, and leave it there. The wrong way, but also a legal and acceptable way, is for them to allow everybody, specifically atheists, that's all we're looking for, but everybody to have their own memorial of equal size and approximately equal prominence. And again, American atheists, and I'll say this on record over and over again, the World Trade Center Board can pick the design. They can actually choose the design of their own as long as it's dedicated to atheists who died in 9/11. American atheists will pay for it. Even if they hate all of our designs, they can pick a design. They can just pick a design as long as it's not like a cross. and I am not interested in making this display remotely negative. We do not want this to be negative.
It's a memorial.
It is a memorial for dead people and in many cases dead heroes. And we're not here to make anybody angry. We're not here to make anybody, oh, look at that. That's awful. That's not what we want. One of the designs that I was thinking of, my favorite design, if you could, if you grab your wrists with your other hands and put one elbow down and one elbow up, so it looks like a hand that is pulling another hand out of a ditch or out of a lower place. I was thinking something like that because it's something nice and physical, something that shows, you know, hands helping each other. But that's just, you know, that's my personal favorite idea. But that's the idea of what I'm looking for. We're not looking for anything offensive by anyone's imagination. Again, the World Trade Center can pick their design. In fact, they can design it themselves as long as it's, like I said, it's not a cross or anything silly like that. As long as it's dedicated to the atheists who died on 9/11, just like we all know the Jewish star is dedicated to the Jews and the cross is dedicated to the Christians. We all know this. As long as the memorial is about the atheists who died on 9/11, American atheists will drop our lawsuit and pay for everything.
Now, Dave, have you get folks tried to reach out to the Islamic community to see if they'll file a suit? Because it wasn't just Islamic terrorists that died that day. There were innocent Muslims in those Trade Center towers that died as well. So
yes,
they theoretically should have equal representation as well.
Absolutely, they should, as should the Scientologists and the Moonies and the Baha'is and everybody. The thing about freedom of religion is that it does not pick and choose. You have to, the government has to be fair to everybody and is not allowed to take sides.
So have you tried to reach out to the Muslims to see if
we haven't, because this is, you know, that's their job. Okay, we're not here to say the Muslims get one too and the Scientologists get one too, even though if they file the lawsuit, we're going to have to side with them because they're right. It would be the right thing to do. We're not going to go into the lawsuit with them. Our lawsuit is about atheists. Our representation that we seek is for atheists. If the Muslims want to try and put one in there, that's going to be up to them and the World Trade Center board. But in reality, the board is going to be in the exact same position because they brought in the Christians and they brought in the Jews. And you can't pick and choose. It's not going to work. And, this is a lawsuit that has been, it's been trashed and it's been hated on, but it is epically important. And the reason that it is epically important is because of the precedent that it will set. It's because if we let this go, it will be a precedent set where a religious icon, I mean, think about this, a religious icon installed by a priest in a religious ceremony on consecrated ground, public land, public money. Think about the precedent that that will set moving forward. And I don't want anybody to think, oh, this would be unique. Oh, this wouldn't happen again. That's wrong. And that has happened over and over again. The religious right is doing this because they're smart, not because they're reactionary. They're doing this because they're taking advantage of the death of many people. And they're going to use it as a launching point for their next initiative. It's definitely going to happen. And we cannot let that kind of precedent be set without a substantial amount of fighting.
Now, you folks have done one thing I think is great with this is one of the plaintiffs is the family of a victim of 9/11 who was an atheist. So I think that's great. Now, you've also received some criticism on this, and some of it I think might be fair. What do you think some unfair criticism that you've received?
Well, we should just leave it alone. This is a sad thing. We should leave it alone. This is a sensitive issue. People get upset. We're making atheists look bad by standing up for our rights. The unfair criticism is the criticism that says, well, you should just let this slide. And it's unfair because it's really, really naive. It's really, really naive. It's the criticism that says this is a one-time event. It's the criticism that says this won't happen again. This isn't going to set precedent. This is not necessary. I have gotten criticized for the quotes that I have given out, which, by the way, have been completely true, all of it. You know, it is ridiculous for anybody to think that the cross is a gift from God after he sat there and watched the towers crumble, after he sat there and didn't stop the planes from hitting, that he deigned to give us a cross to remind us of how, well, I guess how impotent and useless he is. Now, people don't like it when I talk like that, but hey, too bad. That's the way I talk. And by the way, I'm completely right. And you might not like the truth, but as we all know, people don't like the truth sometimes, but it's still the truth. So people have criticized me for talking like that, even though it's true. And people have criticized the lawsuit in and of itself because they want us to just let this happen. But this always happens at a bad time. This is when religion swoops in. If you think about every school shooting, every bombing, that's when religion comes in. That's when the laws are broken. In Utah, they're putting crosses on the side of the road. They're trying to declare the cross a secular memorial. Why are they doing it? Because troopers died. Well, there are always going to be tragedies, and that is when religion comes in. And then when we push back, they say, oh, not now, atheists. This is a time for solemnness. This is a time for unity. This is a time for you to shut up, sit down, and let us break the law and set new precedent. And that's what American Atheists doesn't like to do.
Just playing devil's advocate as far as your approach goes, do you think that there could also be value in empathizing with or sympathizing with the desire to have their religion represented, but also saying we just want to be represented as well, as opposed to saying it's absurd that this cross is a gift from God?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, that's two different things. It is absurd that the cross is a gift from God. And yes, I do feel that they should have equal representation. I do not feel that they should have a monopoly because they think their cross is a gift from God. This is not about bashing religion. I'm going to have my own opinions, and American Atheist is going to have its official position on whether or not the cross is a gift from a man in the sky. But I'm not here to make friends with people who are trying to break the law. I'm not here to make buddy-buddy with people who are literally trying to use an American tragedy to further their own political and or financial gain. Tons of money have been raised for this cross. You can go online and you can buy replicas for hundreds of dollars a piece, replicas of the cross. This cross is making tons of money for the church. It's making tons of money for anybody who uses the symbol, and it will make much more money for those people when it's in the church, when it's in the memorial, and when the suit is settled. No, these people are not my friends, and I am not the type of person that pretends to be friends with anybody who is trying to break the law to our detriment. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, I feel a certain amount of empathy for the poor, misguided Christians who think that they're the good guys in this. I think they need to be educated. I think we need to make sure that everybody understands that all we're looking for here is the equality guaranteed to us by the law. And all that they're combating is that equality. We're the good guys here. We're the ones demanding equality by a legal, peaceful means, in a situation where we feel the law has been very clearly broken.
I agree with both of your kind of key points here, Dave, which is one, this cross is just a T-beam. It's not a gift from heaven. And two, they're breaking the law. But strategically, what we really want to change here, and the primary issue at stake, is they're trying to put specifically religious symbols on public ground. This is not much different than trying to put a cross at the top of the U.S. Capitol building. And the main thing we need to accomplish here is getting the religious symbols out of a very distant second goal is to educate people this is just a T-beam. So by bringing up both points regularly in the media, it may distract it from the primary objective here.
No, I do agree with that. And just to remind you, Todd, I made one statement, and that statement is being brought up by the press.
Of course it is.
Yeah, when John Stewart bashed me on the Daily Show, he didn't talk about the issue at all. He talked about, oh, my one quote. Well, that's fine. That's their intent to talk about that quote. That's fine. I stand by the quote. But yeah, and I just want to correct you, Todd. It's not about the removal. It's really not about the removal of these religious symbols.
Well,
it's about, that's it. It's about equal representation. It's about if they're going to put a religious symbol there, they must obey the law and allow everybody. It becomes a free speech zone. So anybody and everybody who wants to put something up gets to, and they get to do it with equal representation and approximately equal equal size and space and equal prominence. They do not get to allow one and disallow others. And that's the law that's being broken. And that's what we're fighting so hard.
It sounds like there may be a lesson learned here as well, that if you, you know, 99% of your communication was about equal representation and 1% was about, you know, this is just a T-beam, the media latches onto that 1% because it's more controversial. And, you know, you get people like Jon Stewart who missed the entire point. It's maybe in the movement in general, we'll have to be a little bit more careful about how we communicate, because the media is going to twist things to be whatever it wants.
The media is going to twist whatever I say anyways. And if we're worried about that, we'll never get our point across. Remember, the other side is that although Jon Stewart trashed the quote, he did talk about the case on his show. And it did cause a lot of stir on the inside of the atheist movement. People were really discussing it. People were discussing how, oh, by the way, John didn't reveal when he was talking about the case that he's on the board of directors of the World Trade Center Memorial and therefore has a conflict of interest. Oh. Could have mentioned that. Didn't he mention that? That's a little bit of a disappointment on my end, but it's something that you know, we're getting a lot of stir about. So yeah, they might take the 1% and blow it up, but that is still publicity for the case, and it does get discussion going, and that's all good.
So David, this lawsuit is an initiative of the American Atheists, and I understand that you folks have a conference coming up. So why don't you tell our listeners about that?
The National Convention of American Atheists will immediately follow the Reason Rally. So you can go to the Reason Rally and stay an extra 2 days and go to this convention. So the rally's on the Saturday, and the convention is on the Sunday and Monday. We have a lineup that's quite frankly really close to a fantasy lineup here. I've got Richard Dawkins is coming, Greta Christina, Taslima Nasreen, P.Z. Myers is going to be there. We're going to have a former preacher who will come and speak, but also it looks very good for us to have an actual current preacher of a megachurch who will come in disguise and preach about being a closeted atheist behind the church pulpit.
Wow.
Yeah. That's going to be a really fantastic event. The theme of the convention is going to be come out wherever you are. So at this convention, we're going to help people come out of the closet. We're going to talk all about how to come out, why you should come out, and it's going to be a fantastic convention. And, of course, you can find out more about that also at our website, which is atheists.org, atheists.org.
Well, David Silverman, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you both having me on the show. And, you know, I'll see you all at the rally.
Sounds good. I look forward to it. That was David Silverman, and for more information about the American Atheist, you can visit atheists.org, and for more information about the Reason Rally, you can visit reasonrally.org. And of course, you can find both of those links on the show notes page for this episode at thehumanisthour.org, and don't forget, once again, to like us on Facebook.
You can also call us at our listener comment line, which is 202- 618-1371.
We'd love to hear your thoughts and any suggestions for future shows that you'd like to recommend.
Well, thanks for another great show, Jess.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great one.